Well, what a difference a week makes. If you remember last week's story, Jesus was with his disciples. He was trying to get the beat on the street. What are people saying about me? A couple of answers were given, but then he honed in on the disciples. Who do you say that I am? And remember Peter boldly stepping forth and say, you are the Son of the living God. You are the Messiah. And Jesus is like, yes, awesome. On that, I'm going to build my faith. And he gave Peter a new name, which happens often in the Bible when there's a turning point in someone's call by Jesus or by God in the Old Testament. He says, you are Peter. You are a rock. Well, this week that rock has become a stumbling block. The rock that once proved to be a foundation instantly now has become jutting out from the trail's floor, catching any toes that might come along. And Peter's declaration this time is to rebuke Jesus. Going from calling him the Son of the living God and the Messiah now to, you don't know what you're talking about. Jesus has said, it is time to go to Jerusalem. In the very beginning, it says, from that time, there's a shift in the gospel with this new text we have today. And he's speaking directly to the disciples for quite a few chapters. The crowds aren't mentioned. Opposition isn't mentioned. This is him and his disciples, Jesus and the disciples, for a couple of chapters. And so when Peter rebukes Jesus, it's quite a change from where Peter was just a few verses earlier. In the next bit of the text, there are quite a few things going on. Jesus begins with the notion of Satan. Who is Satan? What is Satan doing in the midst of Peter? Who is Satan as a representative of all that oppose God's will? And if we're honest, Lutherans aren't really comfortable talking about Satan. We don't say much about that. We don't dwell on that. At the end of the text, Jesus is talking about his coming into the kingdom. A lot of people hear that as a talk of last things, of the eschaton, of Jesus returning one day, the second coming. And if we're honest, Lutherans really don't talk about the second coming a whole lot. But smack dab in the middle, there is Jesus talking about the cross. Those who want to follow me will pick up their cross. They'll lose their life. Now that's something Lutherans, maybe while not comfortable, maybe while not looking forward to it or celebrating it, we can wrap our heads around it because of Luther's gifts of theology. Luther was a champion of what is called a theology of the cross. That means that all we say, we do, all things we understand, our very sense of who we are, puts the cross at the center. We understand our God to be one who meets us where we are. Not just when times are good, when there's things to be celebrated, when we're living and celebrating, but God also meets us, perhaps moreover meets us, in the messiness of life. We have a God who comes to us when we raise our voices, when we plead, when we beg, when death is near. That's where God comes to us. That's where God's power is most fully known. The theology of the cross says that into death God speaks life. Into despair, God speaks hope. Into the darkness and the unsurety and the vagaries of life, God sheds light. In the midst of our brokenness and our pain, God comes to us. And this is all possible because of what Jesus does. Jesus enters into the darkness and the despair and the death of the human existence. Jesus will go to die on the cross. In the book of Matthew, Jesus predicts his death four times. Four times he says, I must go suffer and die. But every time he does that, he also mentions the resurrection, which is something Peter doesn't seem to hear in Jesus' words this week. The cross is a tough sell. We often forget about the other side, about those last words that Jesus will be raised, about the promise of new life. It's hard to say to folks that the life of the Christian disciple is a life that willingly walks to the cross, that takes up the cross, that is willing to suffer on behalf of others, who is willing to give up a little of one's own life that others might live more fully. To love unconditionally. It's a hard call. German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer, famous for a lot of quotes, one of my favorites of his is, when Christ calls us, Christ calls us to die. Now, Bonhoeffer never forgot the second part of that. Well, it's not exactly in that quote. Bonhoeffer lived the life of Christian hope and knew the resurrection awaited him after his own death. It's a tough sell. Come follow Jesus. Come die. The last generation or two, we have been aware of our dwindling numbers as the Church of Jesus Christ. Congregations all over are struggling. Many are shutting down. The way that we understood church for many of us growing up is no longer the way we do church. Now, over the years, there's been a lot of blame kicked around. The church will blame culture and society, saying they just don't get it anymore. They don't know what's important. That's why they don't come and join us. Society will point to the church and say, well, you have a part to play in this. You do X, Y, and Z, and quite frankly, that was never okay. We're finally calling you out on it. And I think both of those things are true and maybe lead to why the church is struggling a bit with numbers and budget and buildings. But I like to think another reason the church is struggling to get new members is because there are times when we proclaim beyond the shadow of a doubt, we echo Bonhoeffer's words. Christ never said being a Christian would be easy. Never said that it was going to be all unicorns and cupcakes. Quite the opposite. We hear Jesus many times like we hear him today. Those who would follow me must pick up the cross, right? And be willing to die. Like I said, that's a tough sell. That's not something you always put out on the, you know, the bulletin board or on the placards. But when we do proclaim that, moreover, when we live that out where our feet match our words, we are the church. A light in the midst of the darkness of the world. Hope in the midst of a despairing world. A voice that proclaims life in the face of death. That's the church. Now, I want to lift up a caveat with this, something we need to be careful of. I've mentioned this many times, but I think every time we hit it, we need to recognize it. This call to suffer on behalf of others is not a call to suffer for suffering's sake. It is not a condonement of abuse. Right? We don't suffer just because someone else decides that we should suffer. We suffer and we give of ourselves so that others may live. It's a tough, tough talk. And quite often, it circles around misogyny and the expectations of women in a patriarchal church. So I want to lift up today Saint Dolly Parton as an example. You may perhaps know the story, born in poverty, born in a very conservative understanding of roles and what people were to do based on not only economic means, but gender roles. But Dolly rose above it all. I'm not a big country music fan. Now, I've been listening to Jolene a bit this past week, but who hasn't? But you have to love Dolly, right? She knew exactly who she was. She never apologized for it. In fact, she leaned into it. One of my favorite quotes by her is, "It costs a lot of money to look this cheap." She knew who she was. She knew her gifts. And she was kind. So very kind. One of my favorite stories is she was nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know this story? So a couple years ago, they said, "Dolly, we'd like to enter you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame." And her response? "Thank you, but no. I'm not really rock and roll. I'm country, folk." And they said, "No, Dolly, we insist." So she said, "Okay." She rocked the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And on stage beside her were a couple people you might consider to stand along Dolly Parton and sing her type of music. But there was also Simon Le Bon from Duran Duran. And the biggest surprise was Rob Halford, the lead singer of none other than the heavy metal band Judas Priest, who had a rather interesting and intimate moment with Dolly on stage. Why? Because he saw her as just a bubble of light that walked into whatever room she would enter. Okay, I'll stop. But she knew who she was, and the world was better because she held on to that. But now the other side of that, to give of one's life. I hope you have heard of all of the things that she did. The numerous charities and organizations that she set up. She gave away so much of her fortune to help the less fortunate because she always remembered where she came from. She remembered the struggles, the darkness, the despair, the death. And so as much as she could, she answered them with her life. Knowing she was fortunate with what she had become, the gift she had been given, the path that God had laid out for her, but never took it for granted and always gave back. So God bless Dolly. But again, I see it very much as an understanding that we remain who God created us to be, even when we lose our life as Jesus calls us. And we do so always remembering when we're called to bear the cross, when we're called to give of ourselves, that will always lead to a resurrection life. And that's what these rather odd words from Jesus are saying. Those who would hold on to their life don't get it. They will not live abundantly like God calls us to live. But those who let go of their life will find it coming back 100 times. As the life that God does intend for all of us. This next week to come, maybe deal or struggle with that balance a bit. What it means to hold on to who you are, to the you that God created you to be. But look for opportunities where maybe the world is calling you to offer that up for the sake of others. Because the call to Christ is a hard sell, but it's the best deal going.